There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up.
Sean has become very famous. Where's Sean? He's become, oh, is that Sean? Look at Sean. Look at him. Wow. You know, he's got a big ego. He loves it when I mention his name.
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. And yes, the new cut there to the opening that came from one of the president's rally campaign stops yesterday, which, by the way, too, the mainstream media couldn't figure out how to make it a bad thing that a lot of people showed up to attend a MAGA event. So they said, well, they couldn't get everybody inside, which they weren't inside, right? And it said hundreds were stranded at a freezing airfield. So there were so many people, they couldn't get them inside, so people were hospitalized for hypothermia. So it's the president's fault, I guess. We'll get to that later on in the show. Coming up in just minutes, AL1's Congressman Bradley Byrne is going to join us. But the man you want to hear from and I want to hear from as well when there's trouble in the Gulf, that's our staff meteorologist, Dr. Bill Williams, with the latest on Zeta. Dr. Bill, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Sean.
So where are we now? Where's Zeta now, more important?
Well, it's approaching now the Louisiana coast. Hurricane Zeta now has winds of 90 miles per hour. And it's moving north at 18 miles per hour. That's amazing, considered what happened with Sally a couple of weeks ago or more when it was moving at 2 miles per hour. But it's getting close. Some of the heavier rains now are occurring over the coastal areas of southeast Louisiana, and that's where landfall will occur. And it looks like it'll take place around 4 o'clock this afternoon. After that, the center will cross southeast Louisiana and could go right over New Orleans around 6 o'clock. But the stronger winds will be just to the east of the city. Then it'll continue and move into southeast Mississippi around 7 o'clock. And from 7 p.m. to about 11 p.m. tonight, it will cross southeast Mississippi. And that'll be the period of time in which we will have the strongest winds here in the Mobile area, in which we could see some wind gusts of 60 to 70 miles per hour. In fact, those 70 mile per hour winds are going to stretch all the way up into Washington County. Around 11 o'clock to midnight tonight, the storm will move into Alabama, and it will cross Alabama through the morning hours. And we will even see wind gusts of 50 miles per hour and maybe even higher than that along the track through Alabama. 50 mile per hour gusts could occur in even in Montgomery, and even way up in the northeastern portion of Alabama around daybreak. And then it will continue on into North Georgia, where they will see gusts of over 40 miles per hour. So there's going to be a lot of power outages, not only here along the coast, but all the way up through Alabama and even into Georgia and into the southern Appalachians. Now, kind of running through what we can expect here this afternoon, we'll see increasing winds through the afternoon, reaching 25 to 30 miles per hour out of the southeast with gusts to 40 late this afternoon. Then through the evening hours, as I mentioned tonight, from 7 o'clock to around 11 o'clock, southeast winds at 40 to 50 miles per hour with occasional gusts to 60 to 70. And then after 11 o'clock tonight and around midnight, the winds will be more out of the southwest. They'll start to decrease 30 to 40 miles an hour with gusts to 50, and will steadily decrease through the morning hours. And we'll actually see clearing tomorrow in the afternoon, and then cooler, much cooler weather for Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. As far as the storm surge, what we're looking at now is 5 to 8 feet this evening along the Mississippi coast and in the Alabama coast west of Mobile Bay. But east of Mobile Bay, 3 to 5 feet on over into the Pensacola area and 3 to 5 feet in Mobile Bay. The rainfall is going to be on the low side compared to what happened with Sally, in which we had double-digit rains. Looks like in our area we'll have around 2 inches of rain, maybe 3 inches, but that's about it because the storm is going to be increasing its forward speed and move out, and we're not going to have it sit here and produce these enormous rainfall totals.
We don't have the rainfall totals, but you should have people's attention. I think probably the most accurate way to say it is you're going to lose power for a lot of folks because the wind is significant that you're talking about.
Yes.
For Mobile County. I mean, people. I think people just have a feeling this is going to be, you know, 30-mile-per-hour winds or so, but you're not. That's not what you expect for us in the dark tonight.
No, it looks that way. 40 to 50 will be the pattern pretty much through the evening, and then gusts occasionally to 60 to 70. So we'll have some more tree damage, and, of course, the weaker trees after the storm a couple of weeks ago may come down, as well as some of those branches that have been hanging up there for quite a while. And the winds, of course, and keep this in mind, when Sally went through, the Mobile area had northerly winds, which were destructive. Now we have around to the southeast and the southwest, so it's the opposite direction. And so that's what we'll see through the evening hours. So kind of look for these winds to start increasing and starting to see gusts over 40 late this afternoon.
All right, Dr. Bo, we appreciate the update, and you know we'll be checking back with you real soon.
Okay, Sean.
There he is, our staff meteorologist, Dr. Bill Williams. As Zeta approaches southeast Louisiana and then in the dark tonight comes through our area, I know that Congressman Byrne has been tweeting about this as well. He joins us to talk more in just minutes right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Wednesday and good to check in with AL1's Congressman Bradley Byrne joining us now. Thanks for your time.
Great to be with you, Sean. Another storm. Can't believe it, but here we are. Another storm.
Storm of the Month Club is where we are on this. And, you know, thinking about something, I read your editorial from yesterday, and I was thinking about kind of what I had to say over the last couple of days. I'm not saying people need to run like they're in a Godzilla movie, but I did have just a vibe here that people, maybe through fatigue after Sally or whatever, were just kind of, you know, saying, well, it's Zeta. You know, it's not much to it. But Dr. Bill's saying we could get gusts 70 miles an hour here in Mobile County. That's significant.
Yeah, absolutely. I was briefed yesterday afternoon and this morning by the director of the National Hurricane Center. And pretty much what you heard from Dr. Bill is what I heard, which is this thing's going to come ashore late this afternoon around Houma, Louisiana. And then it's going to head northeast, and it's going to come, you know, kind of over Mobile County, maybe Washington to Choctaw County, but we're going to get the effects of this storm starting later on this afternoon. It's going to be significant tonight. So what I've been trying to tell people is get your stuff done during the daylight hours, but when it's no longer light outside, stay inside. Do not go back out until the sun comes up tomorrow morning, by which time it'll be gone.
Yeah, and there's so much stuff to that was weakened from Sally to fall out of trees. I'm getting pictures here on the Twitter feed of people, limbs that have already come down this morning. And in the dark, obviously, you can't see those dangers. What about that when you talk to federal officials for, I mean, do we have a limit with FEMA? If somebody, you know, they're still, you know, wrapping up Sally, and let's say people have damages from Zeta, are they still, I mean, we go back through the process, they just turn it back on? How does that work?
Well, it's a new storm, so if we get a disaster declaration, then everything just starts anew. So whatever claims you had for Hurricane Sally, you could make a separate claim for Zeta. So far, the governor has not requested a declaration from the president or from FEMA. We've been standing by with the governor's office, state EMA, to make sure that if they needed our help, that they would get it. And I don't have any doubt that if we ask for a declaration, we'll get it. So we're going to have to stand by and see what the governor and the state EMA director decide to do about that.
Okay. Because, you know, and of course we'll have to see, you know, what it looks like. But I think, you know, even if somebody had damage from Zeta, let's say they, you know, still had that blue tarp on the roof. I mean, damage from Sally still had the blue tarp on the roof. Here it comes off and you get more damage inside the home from Zeta, you know, kind of complicating things.
It's a second occurrence. So even under insurance policies, you've now got a second occurrence. So it's going to be very interesting to see how that plays out. But the good news about this storm, and they've been very consistent about this thing is moving quick. So unlike Sally, it's not going to hang around. It's going to hit and go. So as Dr. Bill just said, you know, once you get past about 10, 11 o'clock tonight, the wind's going to start dying down again. So the worst part's going to be over the next several hours. And unfortunately, some of that time, it's going to be dark.
Yeah. It's for sure. As we'll know, of course, we'll know more about what it looks like by this time tomorrow, by daylight tomorrow. Congressman Byrne, I also want to talk about what you had to say about vaccines. And this is, I think, we're just kind of run through what you put in your editorial about the vaccines.
Yeah. You know, at the very beginning of this disease back in March, what all the experts told us was the way you get to the other end of this and you get back to whatever new normal is going to be, is to have an effective, safe vaccine. And we all say, okay, we got to get to the vaccine. And then they would say in the same breath, well, it takes seven years to get a vaccine. The quickest we've ever done one is four. And we're like, look, we can't wait that long. We got to get through this. So the president and his folks initiated this thing called Operation Warp Speed to dramatically speed up the development of a safe and effective vaccine. And in point of fact, we now have two companies, Moderna and Pfizer, that are in the final phases of their trials. And the public health experts at the national level tell us that they anticipate that one or both of those, and maybe others that are in production, because we've got another four besides those two, will be ready by the end of the year. Now, that doesn't mean we all can just run out January 1 and get our vaccines, because you have to ramp up production, and they're doing that now. But they'll prioritize those first vaccines on the frontline healthcare workers, first responders, and people who are in nursing homes, assisted living facilities, and the like. Get the most vulnerable, most people that are in the most vulnerable position vaccinated first, and then the rest of us can start getting it. And I anticipate, you know, that will start more widespread opportunities with this vaccine. Will start probably in the first quarter next year, and then it'll move pretty rapidly. In my editorial, I talked about the fact that when I was a kid, one of the big diseases we were worried about in America was polio, and we all stood in line. I remember standing in line at Murphy High School to get your little sugar cube that had the polio vaccine in it. As a result of that, we eradicated polio. Now, we can eradicate this disease, but we've all got to go get vaccinated. So this anti-vaccine message that we're getting from Governor Gavin Newsom from California, or Governor Cuomo from New York, or from Kamala Harris, this anti-vaccine message is not helping. It's hurting, because once we get a vaccine that's been approved by the FDA, everyone should have confidence that it's both safe and effective. And we should go out and get vaccinated. And as I said in my editorial, I'm going to do it myself. I'm going to go get vaccinated as soon as I can.
Okay, I want to kind of bounce this around. And Congressman, you and I have known each other a long time. And this is, number one, it's interesting, the politics of this. You have the left coming out against vaccines when the left purports to be the party of science, right? So that's, but they're against the vaccine. I'm going to look at it not through political lenses, but just, I know folks, you know folks, and how people are. I worry that the numbers, the percentages that are projected for people getting the vaccine in the first quarter of next year, in 2021 at all, I don't think we see that. I'm not saying that I think I want it to happen. I'm just saying if I had to go hedge a bet here, I don't think people turn out in the numbers that we're going to have to reach that immunity level. I just think people are going to stand back and wait to see what other people do.
Well, you know, I'm afraid of that too, Sean. I'm not trying to say that that's not an issue. I think it is. I'm particularly concerned about black people, because black people have been given the message that this vaccine may hurt them. And they have reason, because of past history with the healthcare folks, to have some concerns about it. But no population in America is at greater risk from this disease than black people. And for them to hold off on not getting vaccinated because they're concerned about something that happened 50 or 60 years ago, that's only harming themselves. So I have been trying to deliver that message to black people. Our Surgeon General of the United States is a black man. He's been very clear. Everybody needs to get this vaccination. He's going to do a joint thing with me in a couple of weeks. We're going to put it out there throughout the district. I want white people, black people, everybody to know that the FDA says it's okay. It's okay. You're safe to take this vaccine. Now, no vaccine is perfect. In fact, all of us who get our flu shots every year, you know, it's far less than 100% effective, but it's still more than 50% effective. And this vaccine, or these vaccines, won't be 100% effective, but they'll be far above 50% effective, and they'll be very safe because they've gone through these trials with tens of thousands of people, including, by the way, and the Surgeon General has made this point to us very clearly, we have a significant number of people in these trials who are black. So we can say with certainty, no, this vaccine does not hurt black people. So we've got to get that message out there to people so that we overcome what's being put out there to the contrary, which is anti-science, that somehow the vaccine is not going to be safe or effective. That just isn't true.
Yeah, because you and thinking one poll, I don't know if it was Bloomberg or who had put this story up a week and a half ago, maybe 2 weeks ago, I talked about it on the show, that as a group of Americans, black Americans, higher than any other group, were resistant to the idea of the vaccine.
Absolutely. I was in a meeting yesterday in Bruton. There were several black people. There was a very vocal black man there, and he voiced his concerns, his lack of confidence. And I said, we've got to get you over that. So I tell you what, when I get my vaccine, you come get it with
me. There you go.
You know, we got to get people over that. And I understand the history here. I'm not trying to make light of the history that black people in this country have had, particularly with the syphilis experiment in Tuskegee. But this ain't those times anymore. The vaccine's being developed for everybody. Black people make up a large cohort of the folks that are part of these trials, and we're going to be able to say with scientific certainty that this vaccine is going to be safe for everybody.
And so you're thinking, and obviously you have a lot more briefings than we do on this first quarter, so this is something that happens by March, that it's out?
Yeah. Okay. Now, but it doesn't get out to everybody right away. You start with those priority folks first. And then it starts getting out to the broader public. So, you know, we're not going to get all vaccinated by the end of March. It's more likely that we'll have widespread, like very widespread availability of this for everybody during the second quarter of next year, which is next spring, but before next school year. And I emphasize that. I said I was in Bruton yesterday. I was at T.R. Miller High School there, and they've done an excellent job, just a superb job of opening that school and having their students there in person and following appropriate protocols. But in order to get education back for everybody, we have got to get our students vaccinated before next school year, and we're going to have that vaccine available for them before next school year.
If you're just joining us, talking to Congressman Byrne, I want to a couple things here, and then I got one I want to tweet you had put out yesterday I want to talk about as well. But before we get there, predictions. I mean, you go find your poll, right? Yeah, you could go find a poll that tells you whatever you want now that's going to happen on Tuesday. I mean, it's going to be a landslide for Biden. It's going to be a landslide for President Trump. It's going to be the skin of the teeth. It's going to, I mean, what does Bradley Byrne think?
I think it's going to be close. And I have to remind people, we have an electoral college, so it doesn't matter what the number is nationwide. It's state by state by state.
Right.
So I know Alabama's going to vote for Donald Trump. California's going to vote for Joe Biden. That doesn't tell me anything. I want to know about what's happening in Florida, in Georgia,
yeah,
in North Carolina,
Georgia? Yeah.
in Pennsylvania, in Michigan, in Wisconsin, in Arizona, and places like that. And my prediction is that we're not going to know election night, and we may not know for several days. Now, we went through this in 2000. It was awful. But, you know, we finally got the results of the election in December that George W. Bush had won, and the country didn't fall apart. You know, we kept on being America. Well, we may go through a prolonged period of trying to figure out who won this election, and if so, we're still going to be the United States of America, and people need to be patient, need to have confidence in the system, And I have confidence in the system, but I'm getting briefed about this like once a week. But I'm getting briefed about it this afternoon again about the security of our election system. And I have a high level of confidence in the security of our election system. And make no mistake about it, there are lots and lots and lots and lots of eyes on places that people are being concerned about. If there's hanky-panky here, we're going to know about it.
There you go. And before we wrap, I hope folks saw the tweet or heard the news on it. I'm pretty excited to talk about this because my buddy Ben Raines called me years ago and said, you wouldn't believe what we found south of Orange Beach. And you introduced the Alabama Underwater Forest National Marine Sanctuary and Protection Act. Tell us what this does.
Well, it's very simple. It prohibits anybody from being able to harvest 60,000-year-old trees off the floor of the Gulf of Mexico. It doesn't prohibit you or me from fishing over it, and you know, some pretty good fishing over though. Mm-hmm. It's like a reef out there. It doesn't keep us from diving on it. It just means we can't have people come in and harvest it. There is a company right now out of Vermont that has made the pre-application notification to the Corps of Engineers that they want a permit to go in there and harvest those trees. We cannot let that happen.
Absolutely.
So I've introduced this bill, and I think we'll have broad bipartisan support for it, and I'm hoping we can push it through pretty quickly.
I'm excited because, you know, once that protection's in place, then those numbers are shared, and then we can all, you know, go out there and enjoy it, and enjoy, you know, whether you're going to dive down there and see something that's that old, or you can go down there and shoot a snapper or catch one from up above. It's a good thing.
I think it's a tremendous resource for the people of America, for scientists and non-scientists alike. Ben's done a great job of not only finding it, but making sure we all understood the importance of it. I've worked very carefully with Ben on this bill, along with the Corps of Engineers and the State Department of Conservation, because we wanted to make sure we balance this. We didn't want to keep legitimate fishing, legitimate diving, et cetera. We just don't want a company like this Vermont company coming in and harvesting that wood so they can sell it for a boss or for a table or something like that. You know, that wood is precious and should stay there for as long as it can stay there without human beings taking it up.
Well said. Congressman Byrne, thank you for your time. We'll check back soon.
All right, John. Good to talk to you.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
How about that, too? Our buddy Cameron Smith from AL.com and the Triptych Foundation will be part of the crew that joins us for our coverage on Tuesday night. Election night coverage starting at 7 o'clock. The PM in a la noche on Tuesday. All right. Speaking of Cameron Smith, there he is, my man Cameron Smith from AL.com and the Triptych Foundation. And do we take a second? You and I have not talked since the Tennessee game. So roll tide to you.
I mean, roll tide.
Roll tide.
Let's just put it there.
All right. So good. Now we're going to move on. And I do want to first of all, let's talk about the column from over the weekend. A close election comes with uncomfortable realities for both sides. Okay, who and why is most uncomfortable? Do you think it's equal?
Well, first of all, if you're comfortable with politics right now, you're insane because this is just deeply uncomfortable for everyone. But, you know, what I did at the beginning of the column is I outlined some of the successes of the Trump presidency. And I said, hey, look at some of these successes that he's had. And if you are objective about it, which very few people can be, he's got a track record with the Middle East peace deals, the economy going into, particularly pre-COVID, things were going really well for the Trump administration. And it's a track record that most presidents going into an election year would be proud to campaign on, saying,
sure,
hey, there are a lot of positives. Yet, he gets almost no credit for that. Like, this is solely a referendum on his character and personality. Even Democrats who in the primary said it's actually more important that I think it was 65% of Democrats polled in the primary said it's more important that we have someone who can beat Trump than someone who supports any of my top policy objectives. So Trump's character or lack thereof has been such a distraction from his successes that it's a close race from that standpoint. And then the flip side is Democrats have had 4 years of Trump handing them things to beat him with, and they've run a perpetual negative news cycle. Joe Biden, in terms of likability, beats Trump 2-1. And yet, here we are in a close election for the Democrats that they've been able to pile on Trump on account of his character. But Joe Biden is trying to convince us that he's not his party when it comes to policy and ideas, because that actually hurts him in terms of the election. So both sides have this weird reality. Republicans need to get back to a point where character matters again, and Democrats need to realize that the country simply is not as woke as they are and doesn't really support their agenda. The only thing they can get behind is anti-Trump and something that's well to the center of where their party actually is.
Yeah, that's going to be, Cameron, that's going to be the size of the tent, and I want to come back to that in a second, but I do want to point out, y'all, if any other president, and I mean from both parties, had brokered, you know, the same kind of deals, the peace deals, so we're talking about international politics here for a second, there would be documentary specials and fawning two-hour specials on the cable news channels about that president. You know that.
Absolutely. I mean, that's what we would be up against. I mean, the fact is that even traditional Democrats have gotten wins from this administration. The trade policy is basically a protectionist, pro-union trade policy.
Yep.
They got that.
It's
they
populism.
Got LGBT rights equalized under the Civil Rights Act. I mean, that happened under this administration.
Under
with
President Trump.
A justice.
Yes. Under President Trump. I mean, taking the White House spending time finding people that are in prison unfairly and getting them out. How is President Trump?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I go over these things, and again, you have to be dishonest not to look at it, take away his name, take away all the stuff you don't like about his character, to look at the track record and say it's bad. Sure, I get it. COVID happened, but this is a once in a, you know, several generation type event.
I hope so.
And I get it. People could say he bungled this or that, but tell me what Joe Biden would have done differently that would have resulted in fewer deaths.
By the way, y'all,
I haven't heard that.
By the way, y'all, so Cameron and I have not had a conversation about that before, but Cameron and the listeners here will tell you that's what I've been asking for the whole time. What? Give me concrete examples of just possibilities of what Joe Biden could have done differently, what he would have done differently that would have had a different outcome. I hadn't heard anything plausible yet on that. So, you know, I'm not the banner man for President Trump at every turn, but sure as heck, you look at a side-by-side comparison, I know where my vote goes. So,
well, it's also not the case that, you know, President Trump was, yes, his personality led him to say things that might have been exaggeration or not exactly accurate, but that's the personality stuff I'm talking about.
Yeah. Okay, so the big tent thing I offered, I think it's pretty brilliant what you point out there, that the orange man bad, the hate Trump, is that big tent for the Democrats, because as soon as it gets into, let's talk about fracking, right? You got Joe Biden has the sensibilities. He knows he should BS folks and tell them he's not going to ban fracking because he knows he knows where my mama's people come from, working class folks in Pennsylvania. He knows what they're about. He knows how to sing their song, but he feels the teeth of that choke chain from this extreme left part of the Democrat Party pop that choke chain. And he feels it, and then he says, "Well, he's speaking to whatever group. Oh yeah, we're going to get rid of fracking and on federal lands, and no more fracking." He is torn.
Yeah, absolutely, because he's realized that being a nice guy isn't enough, right? If you've got an agenda behind you that people are like, "That's insane," then you're not going to win, even if they don't like Trump. And so he's basically have to be, "I'm a nice guy, and my agenda is not the agenda of my party." That's absolutely what Joe Biden is trying to say right now. And, you know, this is just, I mean, this is a reckoning for Democrats just as much as Republicans, because, hey, just ask Bill Clinton. Republicans really used to care about character. That was objectively a thing that Republicans did. Now it's sort of like, yeah, well, whatever. In spite of character, we got good results. And I'm telling you, people still care about character when they go to the polls, even if a lot of Republicans say we're getting what we want.
Let's talk about character for a second. And I discussed this some on Twitter last night. I really don't have a segment of the show, maybe until Monday, where I have the time to talk about it at length. But Bobulinski last night with Tucker Carlson, I believe Bobulinski. I also believe there's something else not being said. I feel like there's something else to it, another shoe to drop that maybe he's not, you know, completely away from being judged on this, but I think what he was saying is true. You lay out, speaking of character, a story, to me, that's super scandalous when you have the Vice President of the United States involved in and basically exactly influence peddling. And I looked on the, you know, liberal folks that follow me on Twitter, like, yeah, it's nothing. That's just, it's not a big deal. It's y'all are just making stuff up.
Oh, man. Just switch the names. Imagine yes. This is Donald Trump Jr. With the same deal. I mean, yeah, people would be mad. They're already mad about Trump's kids being involved and holding his businesses and all that other stuff. But, like, this is pretty clearly an example of Hunter Biden saying, hey, I got access to my dad, who's the vice president. I want you to meet him in order to secure positions and the ability to, you know, have a financial windfall for himself. And, I don't know if it went directly to his dad in sort of a quid pro quo, but, you know, that's where you get into illegal land. But if nothing else, it sort of casts a shadow on this notion of Joe Biden is the bastion of character, when it does look like this is sort of influence peddling by a son that he was at least aware of.
He has a meeting. They have a sit down to talk about the legacy of their families here. It almost sounded like something for, you know, it's a retooling of Godfather 3. You know, I mean, it's the meeting of the families here to talk about their legacies going forward. So can we do business or not? I mean, that's my take off of what Bob Alinsky had to say.
What, you don't do that at the Sullivan family? You don't have a conversation with others about your legacy?
I mean, I don't.
You
no.
know,
I
this
usually
is weird,
say,
right? And the American people see it's weird. They see something's not right. I just think that right now we don't trust each other at all and don't trust media at all. So, I mean, people who are going to look at this and they're going to say, you know what? This is the conservative right and Trump folks saying Biden's unethical. It's not going to change the liberals. It's not going to change the conservatives. Everybody's pointing to the same thing, reaching opposite conclusions. And, you know, it's a sad state of affairs right now.
All right, let's do this. We'll run to the break here and then come back. I want to get, you know, you talk about the situation going into Tuesday. Can we do like electoral college math and look at state by state and do some breakdown there?
Let's do it.
All right, so we're going to go to school next with my buddy Cameron Smith, AL.com. You can check him out there. Of course, read his columns each week. And we'll talk about the Triptych Foundation as well. But yes, we're going to electoral college school next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, 50 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along and good to continue our conversation with Cameron Smith with AL.com. Also, the Triptych Foundation. What's the elevator speech there on the Triptych Foundation? What do y'all do?
Well, we try to create a more virtuous society. How we do that is investing in media projects and businesses and ultimately try to create an environment where reasonable public policies and leadership can take root, because after working in Congress, seeing the top flight leadership, they couldn't do a whole lot because the culture, frankly, wasn't there to let them. And so that's what the Triptych Foundation works on. We're a nonprofit, and hopefully, as we grow, we'll have more and more of an impact.
All right, let's talk electoral college. Let's break down the map, or let's look at the states out of the map that you're paying attention. What are you paying attention to? You mentioned like Florida and Georgia. Keep going. Like, who in your basket of states you're watching, where are they?
So what I usually do is I go to Real Clear Politics and check out their averages, right? To see, okay, what is the average of the polls? And I get it. People say, well, polls are all wrong. Averages of polls are less wrong. Let me give you that. So with no toss-ups, where the polling sits right now, the electoral tally is 311 Biden, 227 Trump, and you need 270 to win, right? But that's with Florida going to Trump. That's with Texas, Georgia going to Trump, Ohio going to Trump. So if Trump wants to shift this, he's going to have to pick up some other states. Let's say he picks up North Carolina, okay, and that changes Republican. So now we're at 296 to 242. We've got to pick up some other states somewhere. And that's my question is, well, what is it? Tell me. Okay, so let's get Pennsylvania. Let's get North Carolina.
Okay.
Now we're at 276 Biden to Trump 262. Okay, even if we pick up Iowa, now we're at 270 Biden, 268 Trump, and then you got to tell me where Trump, if Trump's going to get to 270, where is he going to get that one that puts him over the top?
Is it Arizona?
Colorado?
Is it
where?
I don't think Colorado. I think, and just from the outside looking in, I think Colorado. And I actually talked to a friend of mine that lives there yesterday. Just the vibe on the ground. I think Colorado is a no chance. I think it's Biden. What about Arizona? You know, President doing two events in Arizona today. I mean, you don't have to look any farther to see where the rallies are to know where the president needs help.
Yeah, I mean, so basically the states where you'd have to find a pickup that are, in my mind, possible are Arizona or, let's say, maybe Michigan, maybe Wisconsin. I mean, those are dicey, all of those. Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, all are tough wins for Trump right now. And so, you know, if he pulls Arizona, he wins. But that means he's also kept North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Ohio. And I just think it makes it harder across the board because without toss-ups, you take out all the toss-ups that are kind of within the margin right now, Biden has 232 electoral votes. Okay? Mm-hmm. That's where he is without any real toss-ups.
Okay.
Trump's at 125, so Trump has to win a lot more than Biden.
Wow. I didn't realize there was that big of a gulf in locked-in dry concrete state or electoral college votes for Biden. That's surprising. I did not realize. I thought there was that's a way bigger number between the two than I expected.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, I think this is what people, and I get it, it's easy to say because it's never been in play that Texas and Georgia are considered toss-ups. Like, that's never been the case for Republicans. The fact that, hey, based on the averages and where we are, that they could be, you know, that's a big deal. Now, I suspect Trump will win those, but if he does it, for example, you mentioned, hey, if Georgia goes Democrat,
it's done.
You can pack up early.
Yeah. Yeah, our coverage, you know, our coverage comes on at 7 o'clock Central Time, so that'll be 8 o'clock, you know, in the East Coast. Probably we'll have some, I mean, it could be, you know, our show, we could just be talking about stuff after 8 o'clock here Central Time, because if Georgia does go to Biden, that it's all over at that point.
Yeah, well, going east to west, I mean, the way to look at it is in your eastern time zone, you've got Pennsylvania, Ohio, North Carolina, Georgia, Florida. Trump needs those. Like, mm-hmm. He absolutely needs those. So if those are called for Biden early, then it's just a really hard, I mean, particularly Georgia. Georgia is, that's supposed to be safe Republican. And if it's not, I just don't see how Trump wins. And, I mean, you're looking at a real rough night for Republicans if Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Georgia, and Florida light up blue.
Hey, by the way, too, and I'm seeing some texts come in. This is, we're not in the business of this is not being done to disincentivize or incentivize. Cameron's breaking down, you know, the numbers here, because everybody thinks that every statement here is going to be to try to motivate people or you know, keep them from coming to the polls. I think people are motivated.
Everyone should go vote. Vote. Please, please, please go vote. I'm just telling you, you know, from an electoral college standpoint, staring at the map, I mean, Trump's road to go is just a tough one. It just is, based on where the various states are right now. And we should know pretty early in the evening, based on what happens on the East Coast. You know, conversely, look, if Trump picks up Pennsylvania, he picks up North Carolina, he keeps Georgia, Florida, we move through the Central time zone, I mean, it's looking like a good night for Republicans. But if those key states flip blue or go blue, then it could get ugly quick.
Okay. House, I never thought the House was in play. I've had a lot of elected folks, Republicans, come on and tell me, no, Sean, there's a good chance, and hey, maybe they're right. I just haven't seen that path in the House. What about the Senate?
Yeah, the Senate's actually interesting. I am looking at what's going to happen in Georgia, because I think that's one of the ones that's really surprising to me. It looks like, I think Purdue probably wins, but there's another one going on in the state at the same time, and that's the Loeffler race. And so, I mean, I think the special could be really interesting. But the candidate Warnock there actually looks like he's doing pretty good for a Democrat. I think Cory Gardner's in trouble, realistically, in Colorado. I think he's definitely in jeopardy of losing. You know, it all comes down to these toss-ups because, for example, the North Carolina race, which is Tillis, well, guess what? I mean, if Trump loses North Carolina, there's a good chance so does Tillis. And I think that's what we're going to see in these toss-ups. You've got basically seven Republican toss-up races and two Democrats, Michigan and Minnesota. And so, you know, for Republicans to keep the Senate, you got to have a lot of those toss-ups fall in the right direction. And we're going to pick up the Jones seat in Alabama. But put it this way, we're talking about a Republican apocalypse of epic proportions if Jones wins.
Right, which is not going to happen. He's going to win Mobile County, but that's, yep. And maybe Jefferson County, but I don't see that one happening. Cameron, as always, man, I appreciate our discussions. People can find you online where?
You can find me at @TheCameronSmith on Twitter or al.com/opinion. Come join the conversation.
There he is. Thank you, man.
Thank you.
Coming right back. Hour number two of Midday Mobile.